Hi, this is Jeff Kober, and before we start this Disney Insights podcast, know that you should hang on to the very, very end of this podcast where we are going to announce some very important news regarding how Disney and the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District has come to a settlement. All of that will play into the podcast and all the announcements and things that we'll talk about during this this podcast. So please stay tuned and let's get on with the show. Hi, this is Jeff Kober, and we welcome you to this Disney Insights podcast. We come to you from deep in the jungle of Disney's Animal Kingdom to not only tell you the latest and greatest on what is happening at Disney's Animal Kingdom, but how these connect to major happenings across the Disney universe. The big news is in Dinoland, but Asia, Africa, Pandora, and Discovery Island all have something to share. We'll look at what's potentially happening with the advent of Indiana Jones, Encanto, Zootopia, and more. We'll talk about Animal Kingdom's own Joe Rohde's new announcement and what's happening for the 30th anniversary of Disney's The Lion King. There's much to talk about, to include attendance in the park and big records being set at Orlando International Airport. Join us for this insightful visit to Disney's Animal Kingdom. Know also that you can check out DisneyInsights.com, where we invite you to subscribe. And there you're going to see a lot of visuals and a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about, links and other kinds of things. So make sure you check that out. And again, subscribe so you're notified of upcoming podcasts where they occur. We also appreciate all of you who take the time to, well, to subscribe to your local podcasts so you're notified. And if you have a chance to provide a rating or review, thank you so much. Appreciate that. It helps us better spread the word about Disney Insights. Well, again, we're going to start right here in Oasis. I am standing right here in front of a beautiful pool that has got some great features. There's a pink spoonbill bird that actually I'd seen one in our own subdivision the other day, and I wondered, is that a pink spoonbill? And sure enough, here's one at Disney's Animal Kingdom. The only disappointing thing is that the fences have traditionally been bamboo with some netting behind it to kind of give it that natural look. The very front portion has been replaced by kind of a steel. It just kind of looks like a steel fence thing with the netting behind it. It's not as bad as your traditional steel fencing, but still not as good as what has traditionally been there before. You know, as we enter the park, I want to talk about a couple of things before we get underway. I want to ask you what you think is the most expensive park to run, and what do you think is the least expensive park to run? If you think about it, and you probably can come to realize that while every attraction and every location has different budgets and budget requirements, the one park that collectively has some really high overhead is, well, frankly, Disney's Animal Kingdom, because the care and maintenance of all the animals and birds and every living thing within this park is a very expensive process to keep up. It is not a cheap matter to provide the extent of animals that are here in this park and the caretakers and the veterinary services and all that is available. Conversely, if you think about, and it's a little more of a trick question here, if you think about the least expensive parks to run, it's actually Disney's Typhoon Lagoon and Disney's Blizzard Beach, because you really don't have as much labor to run slides and attractions. Sure, you have somebody at the top of the slide, somebody at the bottom. You have guards at the wave pool, but relatively on a one-to-one basis, it's a very, and yeah, a lot of water pumps to keep going, and water pumps are not cheap, but honestly, it is a very affordable thing. Probably that is one of the reasons why if you look at the big picture, because I think that the savings for these water parks, and probably why they're trying to get guests to come here to those water parks on the first day by providing those staying on property complimentary tickets to the park. Probably the reason why this is all tied together is because if you remember, there used to be a snorkeling experience at Typhoon Lagoon where you could, well, Shark Lagoon, where you could swim with sharks. And it was a really awesome experience. There was a boat that was turned over and you could walk through the middle of it and look out through the portholes to see the swimmers with their snorkeling gear. That was done away with about 5-7 years ago. And why? Because it was big overhead to run that particular experience. And that's an overhead that is expected here at Disney's Animal Kingdom. It is not overhead that Disney wanted to put up with in its water park. So that's kind of one of the reasons why. The other thing I wanted to note while we were here at the entrance of the park, and I'm going to move on toward Discovery Island, is just to make a notation at how... before I go, I can see that our Ivy League individual has draped herself against a sign here. It's very clever how that's done. It makes her look even more invisible being wrapped around the sign as if her vines and everything were part of all that. At any rate, such a cool little thing in the park. But where I was going to go with this is... Well, the crowds are pretty substantive this week. Haven't been in some of the weeks past. Pretty substantive. Last Saturday of spring break was actually the highest number of passengers departing with a new passenger record of 102,064 departing passengers from Orlando International. You have probably been caught in some of this. It was interesting because the Orlando Sentinel reported recently how Orlando, which airlines are really good at departing and which ones are not. Delta was at the top of the list for departure on-time records for departures and arrivals. Spirit and... and some of these lesser, well, also Southwest was actually at the bottom of the list. It was not a very very good report for them. But there is a lot of passengers coming through Orlando International Airport. And it's a big issue right now as to whether or not they can truly sustain that kind of service. They really need to improve and upgrade a lot of their terminal services. By the way, I'm here at the bridge, and you can see the characters coming down on the barge. Scrooge McDuck, and is it Launchpad McDuck? The one with the airline kind of costume, leather. Navigator costume on. Launchpad McDuck. I think that's his name. Anyway, again, looking at the crowds as we emerge into Discovery Island, you could see that it's a very full morning. It's a late morning right now, and lots going on in the parks, and it's really tied to higher attendance coming out to Orlando. I will also say, and I make some notes on the website, but there is also a question that with more people having moved to Orlando in recent years, if there isn't more people who are locals using those airline services. So for effect, actually the second highest day ever was on Friday, and I was actually getting off a plane in Orlando from a client visit. So this kind of movement of traffic is not going away anytime soon, and it's a big part of what we're experiencing here at Disney's Animal Kingdom as well as throughout all of Walt Disney World. So here at Discovery Island, we should make note of some things going on here. It was announced at Destination 2023 that Zootopia is replacing Tough to Be a Bug. It's Tough to Be a Bug at the Tree of Life. And I wanted to cover a couple of considerations regarding that. You know, the Tough to Be a Bug show was one of many considerations. Originally, there was a Lion King concept that was thought through for this tree. There was a dining experience that was considered at one point for this tree. It ended up being, and my friend Rick Ranji talks about the day he was in a meeting with Michael Eisner, and Eisner turned to him and said, "Do kids love bugs?" Like he didn't know the answer to this. And Rick says, "Oh yeah, kids love bugs." Well, that's how Rick learned that there was a new movie being built by Pixar. It's Tough to Be a Bug. It was their second movie after Toy Story. And that movie really was the inspiration for the attraction that was built. The interesting thing about that is that it was done with relatively little Pixar animation support. Not only were they under the gun to get the film done, which actually premiered after the park opened with Tough to Be a Bug, but they were also under the gun to address Toy Story 2, which they decided to move from video to a film release. And so they were under a very tight budget to do that. But, and I have to say that I've enjoyed the show. It's fun to see the audience's reaction when they're getting hit by bugs. But it's also been just a terrible show for small kids. I do not know why any parent has wanted to take their kids to that show, because it really is, it's not child friendly. And I also should say, one of the things that a lot of people don't know is that when the park opened, that was actually one of the best animatronics created. Not the biggest, because that belongs to a dinosaur. But it was one of the best animated animatronics created in the form of Hopper, who shows up in the middle of that show. Now with Zootopia, they are building on a very popular and current animated film. A lot of people have forgotten Tough to Be a Bug, and honestly, the computer graphics of that show have kind of worn over time. So it's just not a lot of emphasis on that show anymore, as wonderful as the film it was. But also, one of the things they have going for it, two things. One is they've already established an animatronic character in the form of Officer Clawhauser, which is going to be a part of that film's experience. He's going to be in the position where Hopper was, kind of standing off to the side. The other thing that I think the show has going for it is that it's going to showcase a lot of different animals and not just simply bugs. Bugs made sense because it was deep within the tree, but the tree represented all of the animals in the animal kingdom. And I think this will do a better representation of that. Now, having said that, do I think this is the only Zootopia attraction that could go in the park? In the same way that you see multiple Frozen or Beauty and the Beast or Little Mermaid attractions spread throughout many parks like Magic Kingdom and the studios, don't think that they couldn't also at some point put a Zootopia inside Disney's Animal Kingdom. But that's only speculation. It doesn't remove the fact that Iger, well, the company has really emphasized how impressive the new Zootopia experience, the whole land and attraction, is over at Shanghai Disney. And that's an IP that could be carried and put into other locations as well. So more to come on that, maybe in D23. We'll talk about D23 a little later. But in the meantime, we are moving on to Pandora World of Avatar. And we spoke a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago in our discussion of Disney's $60 billion expansion Avatar is definitely a key possibility for being a major part of other Disney parks, not just here at Walt Disney World, but in an expansion worldwide. For that reason, I just want to note a couple of things for lack of better, you can hear that there's no music in this section of the park. You just hear all these bugs and animals and wildlife here in Pandora. It's a very different soundtrack if you listen. Anyway, one of the things, so let's just go through a couple of things that have proceeded in 2023 on the basis of a successful theatrical release of Avatar Way of Water at the end of the year. In 2024, Bob Iger noted in an investor call when he said the word World of Avatar is coming to the Disneyland Resort. Quote, "Today I am thrilled to announce that we will be bringing an exciting Avatar experience to Disneyland. We will be sharing more details on that very soon." End of quote. Then in May, it was announced that James Cameron, who directed Avatar, and who, by the way, is being made a Disney legend this summer, produced and created the world of Avatar, noted in May that he had been working with WDI on a Pandora project. And then, according to Tom Bricker, Disney tourist blog, an Imagineer off the cuff noted that the Avatar experience would be built in Disney California Adventure. But then, not right afterwards, a Disney spokesperson noted that no such formal announcement as to where it would go in Disneyland had been made. My feeling is that Disney California Adventure has a lot of room if you utilize the Hollywood land. But the problem there is it just doesn't tie to California. I haven't seen where you get the California experience in all this. On the other hand, Tomorrowland at Disneyland is in big needs of help. And it too has space if you took out the former motorboat cruise lagoon and or some of the Autopia and or, you know, built on top of Nemo's submarine voyage. Or you could take another space and just make it a ride that takes off from the future and then sends you through some kind of experience out into, beams you up, so to speak, to the world of Pandora. Lots of ways of doing that. So, in other words, there's a couple of ways of doing it. Iger also stated recently, quote, "We have one Avatar-based land. That's Pandora in Florida. We're going to put a second one in California. That doesn't mean we can't put one somewhere in Asia or somewhere in Europe, for instance." That's been a very recent quote. And by the way, there is room, if you didn't know it, there's room here at Walt Disney World's own Pandora, World of Avatar, kind of back behind the Satuli Canteen into that space that kind of begins to border up toward where the Lion King is. There's lots of room and ways in which you could add more, another significant attraction here at Pandora World of Avatar and Disney's Animal Kingdom. So lots of possibilities to come in Pandora, not just everywhere else, but also here at Walt Disney World. Heading to Africa is another opportunity to talk about the celebration for the 30th anniversary of Disney Animation's The Lion King. Can you believe it's been 30 years? I remember, so I've been celebrating in recent months the fact that we arrived here 30 years ago. And I remember that, I remember two things when Lion King came out. First, my wife and kids flew out west to visit with some family. I had to stay for work, but I remember taking in The Lion King at the theater, at the AMC theater one night without them, and trying to make sense of it. I also remember that the night before they left, we were at downtown, well, what was the Disney Village back then, and there they had a ton of merchandise and the CD, which we bought, laid out in that store. In fact, I think it was the first time I had ever seen, at the time a new film came out, that level of presentation. I think by then they had come to a conclusion. Early on, they weren't thinking this was going to be as big a hit. They thought Pocahontas would be the next big hit after Beauty and the Beast, but and Aladdin and Little Mermaid. But they really, by the time they opened, I think they saw that there was potential. And marketing-wise, I remember all the plush Simbas and everything there. And it was quite an anticipated event. Of course, the rest is history, as they say. Now, the 30th anniversary is going to happen here at Disney's Animal Kingdom from June 10th through September 6th. There's a whole new merchandise collection, items to eat, a Pumbaa popcorn bucket, meet and greets in the park, particularly with Pumbaa and Timon in Conservation Station, plus an opportunity to practice drawing the characters of the Lion King in the animation experience. So that's kind of what lies ahead. Here, what I'm really struggling with is they've done a lot of Lion King celebration over the year. I mean, this park, I don't think would have been here if the Lion King had not been so successful. I mean, really, you don't have the safari without Pride Rock, and you don't have the park without the safari. That's how I see it. It's just a pivotal part of the attraction experience. But like I mentioned, the Pumbaa popcorn buckets, they're already available for purchase. It's not like you have to wait until the big festival event begins. So I'm a little confused. By the way, I'm next to Tamu Tamu Refreshments, which always had this wonderful, and by the way, there's a pineapple crisp sundae. Yeah, I can't stop for this. I gotta keep moving on here for your sake. But there's always been this little hidden alcove behind. I've always liked it because it was a nice, cool place outdoors. You could take a rest, but they've actually put a door through the back wall, and it now extends to another larger covered outdoor dining space, which then links up to Harambe Market. So they've kind of connected all of these to create a more coherent experience. I think that's really smart. They've got really rice bowls going on here and pitas, chicken and shrimp rice bowl, chicken rice bowl, shrimp rice bowl, plus beef and lamb pitas, an impossible pita, a mango passion fruit cupcake. It really is come alive because when they built Harambe Market, it didn't really take. But now you can see all the windows are opening. It's full functioning, and there's more seating space across the way as this Tamu Tamu space has enlarged. Very smart, and it really creates a larger, felt like a separated Africa experience. Now it feels like more one whole experience coming together. I really like what they've done here. By the way, we should mention that while we're, before we move on to Asia, as we talk about the Lion King and all things Lion King, there's actually been a little bit of rumor out there that the Walt Disney Studios Paris is considering a Lion King land to replace. They're in the middle of a big major expansion at the Walt Disney Studios Paris, which makes sense because it's the smallest park in all the Disney parks worldwide. So they're creating this lagoon. They're doing a version of Frozen. They're doing this Rapunzel attraction. I'll come back to a little later. But there's a whole thing going on here at Disneyland Paris with this expansion. And they were going to put a Star Wars section. I think maybe just the Millennium Falcon, right? Because the early photos did show the Millennium Falcon. They were maybe going to do that and not rise, but they've come to terms with maybe that's not the right approach. And they've come to terms with the possibility of doing a Star Wars expansion behind Star Tours in Discoveryland over in the Disneyland Park. Remember, there are two parks, Disneyland Park and Walt Disney Studios Paris. And so that may still be going. That's another rumor out there. But in the meantime, they're thinking of replacing that space with a Lion King space. They've had several shows over the years. And I missed a show when we were in Paris two summers ago. But my wife took it in, and she said it was one of the best things she enjoyed while she was at Disneyland Paris. So if you get a chance to go there, definitely check out the show. And know that there are lots of different ways that you can spend your time celebrating all things Lion King. All right, we are now heading into Asia. And what is old is new again, as former Imagineer Bruce Vaughn returned home to Imagineer a number of months ago. And newer executives like Barbara Booz, who was president of that group, announced that she was leaving. Well, with all that, an Instagram came out announcing this about Joe Rohde. Quote, beginning next week, Imagineers will have an opportunity to participate in a series of masterclass work sessions led by Joe Rohde, following in the footsteps of many former Imagineers. Joe continues to mentor and share his years of storytelling knowledge with current Imagineers, contributing to the future of creativity at Walt Disney Imagineering. And this doesn't mean he's on full-time or anything. He's just doing this series of workshops. But I think it's telling. It's a positive message about where the organization is going. And I quite like it. You know, Joe Rohde is also being honored as a Disney legend in this upcoming D23 Ultimate Fan Event. Joe is known for his work on Pleasure Island's Venture Club, the creation of Disney's Animal Kingdom, the establishment of Aulani in Hawaii, the development of Pandora World of Avatar, the changeover of Tower of Terror at DCA to Guardians of the Galaxy, Mission Breakout. He's also celebrated for his likeness being represented as one of the sea adventures, as Harrison Hightower in the Tokyo Disney Sea Tower of Terror. You will see his likeness there portrayed. It's really quite cool. Anyway, it's fascinating to hear that Joe... It is fascinating to hear Joe was deeply and philosophically able to share his ideas of Imagineering. For example, considering here in Asia how he was both fascinated and frustrated about the scrunchies that were being left at the top of Expedition Everest. If you're not aware of this, the train goes up to the very, very, very top of the summit and then stops and then begins to go backwards because the track has been destroyed by the Yeti. Well, over the years, there has been this weird tradition of people taking their little hair tie scrunchies and throwing them onto the rocks right there at the top of the mountain. Which is just, it's just all sorts of weird. But at any rate, most Imagineers would just simply be ticked off about it. And nobody wants it. An operation certainly doesn't want it, because it's very difficult to get up there and fix that and address that problem. But here's what Joe Rohde wrote about the scrunchies. I thought it was really telling. In his statement, which he Instagrammed, he said, "More ritual behavior. The hair scrunchies. The hair tie thing at the top of Everest is weird, but also ritualistic. It violates the illusion of the scene, but it oddly parallels what people do at the top of the real Himalayas." The real Himalaya pass. Sorry, the band is just passing by the bridge here. It's a little noisy. We'll talk about the bridge in a moment. He goes, which is to leave a rock. So it's a tradition at the top of a Himalaya pass to leave a rock as part of passing through. He goes on to say, obviously someone started it, but what is significant is the huge numbers of people who follow along. What's going on with that? It messes with the illusion of the fantasy place completely. However, it creates a very real interactive ceremony at the actual top of the highest point of the ride. I cannot condone this behavior, partly because some poor person has to clean it up, but it does interest me. I think the fact that he could take something as crazy as the scrunchies on the top and make sense of it, he is definitely the right person to teach Imagineering principles to the other Imagineers. He said in another quotation, "There are details within details within details to anchor you in the fact that we are talking about the real world, not an illustrated children's book fantasy real world." And I think that really plays out so well here at Disney's Animal Kingdom. Now, mind you, it is not an authentic Asian experience or African experience that you have when you come here, because there would be so much, you would be seeing so much more trash in the streets. You would smell sewage. You would see poverty in play. Those things are very real parts of any third world scene. And yet, with all that he does portray, with wires all scrunched together, electrical wires all scrunched together, posters that are hand-drawn, he does present a very idealized real world view that allows people to be immersed into the experience. Anyway, before I leave Asia, and as I kind of come around where Finding Nemo is, I should mention that one of the announcements last week, in addition to the discussion about the Festival of the Lion King anniversary, one of the announcements was a new drone show coming to Disney Springs this summer, playing, I think, May 26th through like September 2nd, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I mention that here because I think the best place to have a drone show at Walt Disney World is here in Asia at Disney's Animal Kingdom. There's already an arena. It's largely pointed in one direction. You might have to close off the barbecue place on Discovery Island for it, but it's away from animals, and the drones could come in and out through the bridge. In other words, instead of going over the people out into the lagoon, they could come underneath the bridge and then expose themselves and do a whole show. I just think that's an opportunity that awaits Disney's Animal Kingdom. The drone shows have become so impressive in Disneyland Paris that whatever they show, I mean, the last drone show they had at Disney Studios, the only one they've had here at Walt Disney World was, I'm sorry, at Disney Springs, was very early on in the pioneering of these things. And they've come a long way since, and I think there's a huge potential for doing it in a way that would be great. No pyro involved, which is important to Disney's Animal Kingdom to not cause problems for the animals. I just think there's all sorts of potential. Well, we're here in Dinoland at the foot of Chester and Hester's Dinorama with the big dinosaur. And this is really an opportunity to talk about the biggest piece of news relating to Disney Animal Kingdom in the last, well, the last several months, is that permits were filed for construction trailers last week, which believes to be in conjunction with the plan to change Dinoland USA. Of course, the assumption is in all this is that it will be the plan shown by Josh D'Amaro in the last D23 event at the Contemporary. Here's what I think. Remember, there's been two versions of that. There was an earlier version that had more of a Moana presence, and now this version suggests an Indiana Jones and an Encanto presence. And so let me just talk to you about what I think may end up happening here. Because it is simply easier to install, and because Officer Clawhauser is already in development as an animatronic, the new Zootopia attraction that would be coming to the Tree of Life is most likely to arrive first out of all the changes being made. And Disney's Animal Kingdom, remember the Pandora World of Avatar, that came in 18. It's been a good few years, because the following year, Toy Story Land came to the studios, and then Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, and then Magic Kingdom, well, then Guardians of the Galaxy to Epcot, and all the Epcot changes, and the Magic Kingdom with Tron, and with now Tiana coming next summer. I mean, Disney's Animal Kingdom should be next to go. And I think the way to do this is, I could see very much that as early as 2025, we could see a new show in the inside the Tree of Life. The infrastructure's there, they've got to create the animation, but it's a very doable thing in that time frame. Indiana Jones, and by the way, check Disney Insights, because that's going to show you where all these things are placed. It's going to replace the old dinosaur attraction, but because so much of the infrastructure and ride system that supports it, and even the larger infrastructure, I mean, Restaurantosaurus and Chester and Hester's Dinosaur Treasures, all those things can be rethemed and could be opened up 1 year later, or roughly 2 years from now in 2026. By the way, the animal of the day in Indy is snakes. Why does it have to be snakes? And if you remember, in the Indiana Jones adventure, there's a lot to do with snakes in that attraction in over at Disneyland. The carousel-like building in the diagram, that honestly is confusing to me, and could be many other things, like the Rapunzel spinner style ride at Disney Studios in Paris. That's kind of a rounded building. It kind of is in about the same shape, size as the Mad Tea Party. It could be just a band dance. I don't know what it could be, but at any rate, it's a little confusing as to what that is. But it sits where the Dino Dig area is, which is confusing to me because, hey, Dino Dig area goes really well with Indiana Jones. So why not just make that a part of the attraction? And then the Encanto attraction that's shown in the diagram is still yet to be defined as what style of ride or attraction it might be, but it likely would not open up until 2027. My hope, and listen carefully, my hope is that in the same way that Mystic Manor in Hong Kong Disneyland is to the other haunted mansions, I'd like to think that the Casa Madrigal in Encanto could be what is Mystic Manor. In other words, you could take a trackless ride system and you could put it through magical and mysterious rooms, much as Mystic Manor. They're only themed to all things Encanto. And man, if you think about it, the Encanto is just, you think about Antonio with all his animals when you go into his room. You think of Bruno and the mysteriousness of all that. Maybe Bruno is having to do something to save the animals. There's just so many wonderful ways you could play out an Encanto ride that would theme and tie into Disney's Animal Kingdom. By the way, the Encanto show is, another announcement from last week, is headed to Epcot this summer. It will be interesting to see if the reception of this new show, which depends on how guests, it'll be interesting. It's almost like they're putting out a trial balloon with this new show. It's going to be premiering on the Communicore stage, the brand new Communicore stage, which sits next to the Communicore building. And it's referred to as Celebration or Celebración Encanto. It's going to run several times throughout the day, and it'll be a sing-along to include two narrators, kind of the same way Frozen is done, as well as Madrigal and Bruno, which again is a little bit like how the Frozen sing-along is done. Here's my concern about this show. The image, and again, you might look at DisneyInsights.com to see the image, but the image of the attraction was not impressive. It shows no seating area, so everybody's going to have to stand or sit on concrete. Not interesting, even if they laid artificial turf, not at all interesting to me, especially with the heat outside and the humidity. And it's premiering in summer. It just feels a little bit like it's being set up for disaster. Maybe the way they'll flow fans, or I don't know, mist machines. I don't know. Maybe there'll be a way to cool it. Maybe they'll change their mind on the seating. Right now, I'm a little skeptical about what's happening on this. By the way, we are probably going to hear more on all of this and probably other things we haven't heard about at the August D23 Ultimate Fan Event. Hey, it's Jeff Kober, and I'm actually back in the studio. Back at Disney's Animal Kingdom, I was going to record something about D23 and all the craziness of booking a reservation. I might talk about that at the end. But bigger news came out from, Disney and the state of Florida have settled lawsuits over the tourism district. What that means is that Disney has gotten together with the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District's board, which is a longer name than I ever want to remember in this life, but they have determined to come together on a deal. And that agreement says that covenants and agreements approved by a Disney-friendly board shortly before the state takeover in February 2023 would be null and void. Disney also agreed to drop a lawsuit seeking public records and withdraw its requests. So, and a 2020 comprehensive plan will be in effect, and the district agreed to consult with Disney while reviewing and amending this plan. Both sides seem to have struck a tone of reconciliation with the board. There have been some new members added to it. By the way, I'm taking a lot of this off of the Orlando Sentinel, so thank you to Skyler Swisher for writing this up. But there is now still a separate lawsuit, which is against Governor DeSantis and state officials, saying that it's about public political retaliation when the corporation opposed the Don't Say Gay law, and they felt that DeSantis had taken direct hits right at Disney because they had a different opinion. And that a federal judge actually dismissed that lawsuit in January, but Disney is still appealing that. So
what does all this mean? Well, I think what it really means is that Disney can get on to doing the very things that we've been talking about in this podcast. After all, it wants to go move forward with a lot of new plans and new attractions and new resorts and projects and everything like that. And so this is going to allow them to do that. And by the way, DeSantis had said in answering responses from reporters, he thought it was actually Universal's Epic Universe that made Disney kind of move forward and off of the place where it's at. I think there's truth to that. I also think that Disney didn't want this hanging over them as they seek board votes in anticipation of the upcoming shareholder meeting. I think that's probably a part of it. What we do know is Jeff Valley made a statement, who is over the president of Walt Disney World. He made a statement saying, quote, "We are pleased to put an end to all litigation pending in state court in Florida between Disney and the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District. This agreement opens a new chapter of constructive engagement with new leadership of the district and serves the interests of all parties by enabling significant continued investment and the creation of thousands of direct and indirect jobs and economic opportunity in the state," end of quote. I think that this just allows Disney to move forward and get the job done. And probably there'll be more to come in the days and weeks and months ahead. But here are some key points of all of this agreement. The development agreement and restrictive covenants previously under the lawsuit are to be considered null and void. Disney will not challenge the district's view that certain comprehensive plan and land development regulations adopted in January of the previous year are invalid, recognizing the 2020 comprehensive plan as the current operative plan. The district commits to reviewing and potentially amending the 2020 comprehensive plan with consultations involving Disney and other parties. Both parties agree to dismiss with prejudice the claims and counterclaim on the ongoing state law court lawsuit. Disney will also dismiss with prejudice a separate court state litigation regarding public records and withdraw its pending public records request. The labor services agreement between the district and Reedy Creek Energy Services would be amended so the term would expire in 28 rather than 32. Disney asserts ownership of certain long-term mitigation credits. That's pretty much where all of this is come to. But I really think that relevant, and the reason why I'm putting this in at the end of this podcast is because we've talked about so many things happening at Disney's Animal Kingdom and also elsewhere. The potential, when we talked about the $60 billion plan a couple of weeks ago, Disney needs to move forward. Disney wants to look good in front of the board. Disney wants to compete against Epic Universe, and this is going to allow them to do that. And that wraps it up. So thanks for joining us on this very big Disney Insights podcast. I hope you have found some insights, and I hope that wherever you are, whether it's Disney's Animal Kingdom or your own home, that you always follow the compass of your heart. Have a great day. We'll see you real soon.